Okay, this is the 11th of September.
Yeah, 9/11.
Commemorating 9/11, exactly. We're visiting with Phil Schmitz. Phil was one of the original hires at Western Dubuque back in 1960.
Yes.
Anyway, Phil, give us some background. Let's go back, if we could, before you were hired, your college experience and that sort of thing, and leading up to your getting hired at West Dubuque.
Okay, well, I graduated from St. Mary's University in San Antonio in 1958. My first school I was employed by was Biola. And after 1 year, they closed their high school and offered me a job teaching elementary, but I really preferred the secondary. So my second year, I taught at Colesburg, and I was there full-time in 1959. Signed a contract to teach there in 1960, and in the summer of 1960, Wayne Drexler contacted me. They were just beginning to organize the Western Dubuque School District, and he said he wanted to start a band because he thought that would be kind of a unifying force to bring kids from all these different communities together in one activity. So Wayne offered me a job as the first band director that summer, but I was under contract at that time with Colesburg. And finally, Colesburg agreed to let me go 3 days a week to teach at Western Dubuque and the other 2 days at Colesburg until I found a replacement for myself, which was, I think, only fair because I legitimately signed a contract to teach at Colesburg that second year. And fortunately, at the end of the first semester, a gentleman who was very well qualified was anxious to go back into teaching, and he had the right credentials for Colesburg, so they hired him the second semester of 1960, and they relieved me of my contract, so I then became full-time at Western Dubuque.
This is before the high school actually was constructed.
Yeah, at that time West Dubuque had a high school at Epworth, the old high school, and they had a high school at Peosta, and I think they had probably three or four elementary centers and 30 to 40 one-room schoolhouses. And Wayne insisted that we offer band to everybody that wanted to participate. So my first year job was to visit all of these one-room schoolhouses and offer band to any kids that wanted to start. And a lot of them did. I think I ended up with students in 14 of these one-room schoolhouses. And we gave lessons out on the porch.
Kind of a schedule that you put together.
Oh, I probably 80% driving in my car and 20% teaching. But, you know, it was up to me to contact the teacher, and I would go and I'd have a trumpet, a clarinet, and a trombone, and a drum, and a saxophone. And I'd demonstrate each instrument. And before I'd play the instrument, I'd hold it up and I'd say, "Anybody know what this is?" And I was at Bernard, and I held up a clarinet. "Anybody know what this is?" And one kid back in the room raised his hand and says, "Yeah, I know what it is." I said, "What is it?" He said, "It's a harpoon." But anyway, my first year consisted of giving lessons in these 14 one-room schoolhouses, less than a week. And then I also taught at the high school, the high school at Epworth, and elementary school, and one at Peosta. And I think the elementary school at Farley, too, had an elementary school.
Where did you go for the instruments, actually buying the instruments?
At that time, there were two music stores in Dubuque, Faber's and Rainier's. And Faber offered instruments. The kids would rent them for 3 months. I think at that time it was like $7 a month for 3 months. At the end of 3 months, if they were going to continue, if they showed progress, they could buy the instrument. And the rental money would apply towards the purchase of the instrument. So
okay.
Frank Faber at Faber Music got practically all of the business because he was kind of the lone music store in the area.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, so that was 1960, 61?
Yes, right.
So the following year, the building was under construction at that time, the high school?
Yeah,
So you
right.
were still doing...
I think that opened in 65, if I'm correct.
Maybe 63.
63?
Yeah.
Okay, because I remember going in there and the gym floor was dirt. They wanted to finish to complete the classrooms first, you know, and we did have a rather small band room. Band and vocal music shared the same room. And it certainly, you know, as the band continued to grow, we outgrew it. We, you know, we're just like sardines in that room.
I remember.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, things evolved quite well. Kids, you know, became interested in band and enrollment grew. I think our first band had like 28 members in it.
Okay.
And then it grew to, you know, past years we always had at least 200 in the band. Our largest enrollment was before Wes Dubuque started the high school in Cascade. And I think enrollment there was 230 in band, but we ran out of uniforms at 210, so
okay.
Some kids became spectators.
where did you order the uniforms for the...
The first set of uniforms we got from, I think, a company named Oswald, you know, and they lasted probably 7-8 years.
Okay.
And they were a wool uniform, but the problem with wool, they had a lot of white trim on them, and over the during the course of the years, the white trim would kind of turn yellow after numerous dry cleaning and wearing. So then we decided at that time, the hot fabric was Naugahyde. So we were told by uniform companies that if you go to Naugahyde, the white will stay white. It'll never fade. The colors will stay vibrant. So we went to a wool uniform with a Naugahyde dicky that we wore over the top of it. Not realizing that wearing a Naugahyde uniform is like dressing in a tent. And you'd go out on a hot, steamy day, and you wouldn't last very long. So, and then we went back to a Dacron. Dacron was a big thing. We went to Dacron uniforms.
So did you do fundraising for the uniforms?
Yep, then? Yep. Band parents paid for the uniforms. I think the first set, one of our parents knew Harry Wallert real well. So she set up a meeting for us to go in. We had a sample uniform made from the uniform company. She set up a meeting to go in and see Harry one evening in his house. And I think he lived on Fremont. So we went in and we told, at that time, I suppose we had to raise $20,000 for uniforms, which was a lot of money in those days.
Yeah.
This was our first set back in the early 60s. And Harry looked at it and Harry said, "Tell you what, when you're at the halfway point, you come to me and I'll buy the second half," which was smart idea with him.
Yeah.
He wanted to make sure that people were just not coming in for a handout, that they really wanted to work for what they wanted. And so Harry paid for the second half of his uniform. That
standard.
Yeah.
So then you said your first long-range band trip was the Black Hills?
Yeah, Rapid City had a band festival, and we went out there. It was not a real big, high-powered thing, you know. A long trip getting out there and back. But it went okay. We were in a parade out there. And then we went to the next one was at Indianapolis for the 500. And the 500 parade, a day before the race, you would march in about a 2.5-mile parade in downtown Indianapolis. And then, the day of the race, each band would march around the track, which was another,
okay.
I think, 2.5 miles.
Yeah.
So. And then we were allowed to stay for the race, you know. And we were there 3 times.
Is that like chartered buses that you went with?
Yes, yeah, we always chartered buses. And we took a school bus at the time with the instruments in, because of not all of the instruments would fit in the instrument bays in the charter buses, so we always had to take another support vehicle along with some of the bigger instruments.
So, Macy's Parade?
That came along, but I think that was after we had a couple performances at the Cotton Bowl, and then we applied for Macy's and were accepted there. And following Macy's, we were in President Carter's inaugural, and after that, President Clinton's inaugural. So those were probably the highlights. But we did have three performances at the Cotton Bowl. We also went to the World's Fair in Knoxville. And one other one, I'm trying to
down
think.
Down to Atlanta.
Atlanta, Georgia was the other World's Fair, And those were just like a parade type thing. And we were at Disney World, I think, twice to do the same type of gig.
Remember being along on the Atlanta. So we had 7 buses, is that right?
I think so, We were probably at full strength at that time.
We stayed at that hotel in Atlanta. And then drove down to the parade route.
I know one of the trips to the Cotton Bowl, the band parents decided to rent a big U-Haul to put the instruments in so the kids would be a little bit more comfortable on the buses. So we had three parents that said they would drive the U-Haul down, and I suggested go a day earlier because this was in the winter months in January, and you might hit a snowstorm or something. So they left a day or two ahead. I told them where the hotel was and they were to meet us there. Well, we pulled in with the buses and we couldn't find the instrument in the truck, and so they did a good job of hiding it to give us a couple of nervous hours. I wonder where the instruments.
No, they're stolen.
No, they hid it, so they couldn't find it.
Was that trying to think? Did Chico go along?
No, that was before Chico's time.
Okay,
that was a Russ Thompson from Epworth.
Yeah, I remember on Russ.
Is that the one where you got all the ice?
That was later. That was on that one.
That was the second one. Yeah.
Only walk right in front of the TV cameras.
Yeah. Well, what they did, the television cameras at the Cotton Bowl were in about the fourth block. So they said, do what you can, get through the TV cameras, because it was nationally televised, and then disband, because it was so icy and cold and terrible. So, in fact, all three trips to Dallas were, the weather was up in the 70s and 80s a couple of days before we went, and when we got there, it was down into the 30s. So.
I remember going to San Antonio.
Yeah, we went took a side trip to San Antonio and did a concert at the Alamo.
Yeah,
Matt was with Matt. I just talked to Matt. He said say hello, but he was with that one.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
He brought me back a beer plug.
Okay.
San Antonio.
Anyway,
Lynn was first Cotton Bowl.
Okay.
The first one, the real icing one.
No, I think that was about the second.
Was it?
Second or third one. When we got ice.
I remember going the next day to the game.
Yeah, and there's about an inch of ice on all the
Notre
seats.
Dame? Was that that game?
Yeah.
Joe Montana was a quarterback. Anyway, I never got off the bus. It was I still remember waiting there, and eventually our assistant band director, Mr. Jim Nelson, exited one of the buses, and I remember going across the parking lot and eventually came back. I think he had 3 cases of Longhorn beer.
Not for the band, I
hope. Under the bus.
Yeah.
And brought back to the high school.
But that one Cotton Bowl, we were at 2 Cotton Bowl games. One of them, I think Purdue band was there, and one of our alumnus was a percussionist in the Purdue band. And when the Notre Dame band played, one of our high school alumnus played in the Notre Dame band. So it was kind of a little homecoming. Yep.
I remember that DC one. We're driving to the wherever you get together. to start. And I, you know, they had a horrible weather. And we're looking out the window, and the Army guys had flamethrowers trying to get the ice and snow out of the gutters. All our kids were saying, "What's that all about?"
Yeah, that was like in the staging area where they.
So that, and anyway, the one trip to D.C. where we had the rainstorm.
Okay, that was for the 4th of July parade.
Yes.
What we would usually do, usually Philadelphia would have a parade on the 3rd of July. And my contact there was a girl, a lady who used to work for the Macy's organization, for the Macy's parade. And I got to know her. And then she started communicating with me about bringing the band to the 3rd of July parade at Philadelphia, which we did. And then we have the 4th of July parade in D.C. the next day. So we had two in a row when we
go on
that
Eastern. Didn't you go to the Phillies ballpark, too?
Yeah, we played at a Phillies Cubs game, too. At that time, I think it was Veterans Stadium, which is no longer in existence. Yeah, right.
Well, now, okay. And I remember the D.C. parade and the rainstorm, and we got everything all wrung out, got on the buses, and we were going across the river, and that was the start of the fireworks.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we're in these buses, we're in the middle of the bridge, and the traffic stopped. And everybody got out of their cars and buses and watched them.
Yeah.
They were in the middle of the bridge.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts.
Yeah. Right, mm-hmm. Right, yes,
there.
It is. Right. Yeah.
And anyway, that's the way it was.
Yeah. Well, we used probably for, other than our first two band trips, we used the Tri-State Tour Company out of Galena. And they had one particularly delightful driver by the name of Eugene Sweeney. And we would be going in one of the major cities through downtown, and of course there'd always be a park bench with the homeless guy sleeping on it, and he'd get on the intercom and he'd say, "Hey kids, look out the window. See that guy on the park bench?" And they said, "Yeah." "So you know who it is, don't you?" And they said, "No." He said, "That's a retired band director." They'd fall for it.
I remember being on the bus, and the equipment bus in D.C. It was parked along the street. Lloyd McDermott was driving.
Okay.
Sitting there, and we're talking, and all of a sudden this guy pops in the door. And he says, "Hey man, you want to buy some jewelry?"
He had just made a trip to Macy's, probably.
Probably bought something.
$20 on his arm. How many trips did you go on, boss?
I went on the 4th of July one to Philadelphia.
Okay.
See, I went on the Cotton Bowl disaster and the ice.
Yeah.
And we also went up to Atlanta and Disney World.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I think I counted like 16 major trips during my tenure, and we never sent a kid home.
That's right.
But we did send a chaperone home once when we were at one of the inaugural parades. The band parents decided to have a party for the kids the night before the parade in the ballroom of the hotel, and the hotel provided, you know, some snacks and drinks and so forth. And one of our band parents was dancing, and she tripped, fell down, broke her arm. So my assistant ran over and got a couple magazines, and used it as a splint wrapped around her arm. She got to the hotel, and they took the magazines off her arm, and they were Playboy magazines. And we had to fly her home. She's the only one we sent home because she had a broken arm.
Yeah, she was right from Dyer's, right?
Anglican, yeah.
Yeah.
She had two boys in the band.
Yeah,
and
she was a nice lady. I remember visiting with her. I was on that trip.
But But that trips my memory too, because I think in Florida, wasn't a chaperone or a
driver.
The driver
broke his arm.
Tripped over a curb or something.
He tripped over one of those things that they have in parking lots where the, you know, those yellow concrete things.
Yeah.
And I really felt bad because I called him over. I wanted to ask him or tell him something. I said, come on over here. And he took two steps and down.
Oh, boy.
So they had to fly him home and fly another driver down to take his place.
That.
Yeah.
Now, you did Macy's. Mm-hmm. How many times did you do that?
Just once. Yeah.
Was that the only New York trip you had?
Because
I remember the New York trip was a lot of chaperones.
I think we visited New York a couple times when we were in D.C., you know.
I was on one of those.
Because I remember we played the concert out there at Fisher Hall near the Lincoln Center. We were to perform a concert, and we came, I had, you know, permission from the city fathers to play a noon concert because the workers would come out of the high rises and eat their lunch in this little square, you know. And so band was assembling, and the policeman came over and says, what are you doing? I said, well, we're scheduled to play a concert. He said, you can't play a concert here. I said, why not? He says, you got to have an appointment. I said, oh, I don't have an appointment. Apparently, if you didn't make any sound or noise, or you got to have an appointment. So we got walked through that somehow, and we did play the concert.
talk about some of the... your fundraising stuff for the trips as far as...
Oh,
racing.
Golly, we sold everything. But, you know, a couple times we utilized the radio station WDBQ in Dubuque, and they came out and they did a marathon type thing, broadcast where people would phone in and give pledges, and one group would challenge the other group, say, well, we gave $50, where are you guys? So that really put us over the top on, I think that was the Macy's Parade, the first one we went to, and then they did it again for one of the inaugurals.
You did it for Carter's inaugural.
Yeah, because usually our biggest cost was transportation, and we're talking like $28,000 for busing, you know, because you got 5-6 buses for almost a week, you know, so that was the major cost. I always asked the band parents if they would raise half, and then the other half would come out of the kids' pockets or through different fundraising. But WDBQ
didn't have to pay much more than $100.
Some of them didn't pay anything because they did fundraising all year. And literally virtually paid for their trip, you know, the expenses. So. Yeah, those were the glory days. They were fun.
A lot of great experiences for kids from a rural area. Like
yes,
ours.
Never,
you know,
been anywhere.
A funny story. We went
our parents too.
Yeah. Well, most of them had a vacation. They stayed home. Anyway, one unusual thing when we went to Macy's Parade, we left, I think probably at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and drove all night. Got to New York City the next morning. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning, and we went through the Lincoln Tunnel and came out. And of course, everything was active. Cars moving, people walking. We pulled up in front of our hotel, which was at the time the McAlpin Hotel, right down on 34th and Broadway. And we had one kid who I swear was never out of Dubuque County. He didn't want to get off the bus. He was so frightened at all the movement, you know. And we had to talk him into getting off the bus, going into the hotel, checking into the hotel.
Okay, how about the... must have been the Philadelphia DC trip where we went to Philadelphia. Well, we went up to New York to the Statue of Liberty.
Yes.
Took the ferry across.
Yeah, but there were multiple ferries.
Yes. And we were going to stay in New Jersey that night.
No, it's New Jersey, Bob.
Anyway. Coming back, whatever happened, what happened was Mary Kay Wolfe was the treasurer.
Okay.
She had the money for the hotel.
Yeah.
She took the wrong ferry.
She got the wrong ferry.
She wound up in Manhattan. and somehow was able to get on a train to get back to the hotel.
And to complicate everything, there were no cell phones those days.
No.
You know, if we had cell phones, we could have walked her, you know, got her on the right track and got her back. But, you know, you didn't know when someone was, and you just were at the mercy of them going into a payphone and phoning you.
Exactly. I do remember that.
Did you ever have any experience losing kids?
Oh, we had a couple that were late getting back to the buses, but, you know, we always threatened, told them, we're going to leave at such and such a time, whether you're here or not, but we never really did, because who knows what would happen to the poor souls. So, but I think the big thing is that we never had a... We never had to send a kid home for violating any of the rules.
Yeah,
that, you know,
they were great.
And I really did a lot of brainwashing, you know, put the fear of God into them. And they may have gotten by with a few things that I wasn't aware of, but it wasn't, you know.
I remember with the particular hotel we stayed at was a kind of a horseshoe-shaped affair. And I think you or some of the chaperones were able to sit out in the middle on a chair.
That's right. Yeah.
And could observe every room.
We could see every time a light went on in the room. And we had a bullhorn. Put the fear of God in them.
Oh my. Which ones, what'd you say, there were 18 major trips you figured?
I think 16.
16?
Yes, I have a list of them at home.
Which would be the most memorable, you think?
Probably both inaugural parades, because they were, you know. If you would go to places like Macy's or the Cotton Bowl, which were at that time covered by CBS, they would always tell you, you know, you may not get on television, you know. If the network decides to go to commercial, that's their decision. But at the inaugural, you knew that the folks back home would get a chance to see the band and hear the band, you know. But, you know, they were both run by the military. Everything was very well organized, and when they said jump, you jumped, and, you know,
well,
just...
I remember that 76 election, or 77 inaugural. Carter was a military guy himself. He was a Navy guy, and I remember trying to catch up with your band.
Yeah.
I was on those side streets, and you're going down Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah.
I was sitting on, like, a dumpster in my suit, and then I wanted to catch up with you, and they were going so fast. If anybody broke down, they just pulled it all off.
Yeah, they said if you can't keep the pace.
You said you had really
hustle. But you know why that was? Is because at the last minute, Carter decided to walk. And before they let him walk, the Secret Service pulled every manhole cover and inspected it before they let him walk. Yeah.
Rosalind had her green coat.
Yeah.
That was the only trip I went on, but we saw so much. I mean, Washington, D.C. is a great sight, besides the historic part of it.
Plus, it's all free, you know. You go to any place else, they got your hand out. You want to go to a museum or see something of, you know.
First night, we went to the Lincoln Memorial at night. And that was
inspiring, you know. Probably one of the most impressive monuments that impressed me the most was we went to the Korean monument, and it was raining that day. And the Korean one has all of these soldiers walking through a rice paddy with ponchos on, and it's all, you know, cast in metal or bronze. And that was so realistic because of the mood of the weather, you know, and the rain. And you almost thought you were there.
All those experiences that those kids had, based on the fact that they were in the band program, were able to go.
That was the, you know, and that was kind of the carrot on the stick, because I always told the kids, I says, you know, if you want to go to a major trip, we've got to take care of our hometown obligations first, you know. That's why it's important to play for the Epworth Fireman's Picnic and the Memorial Day for the Legion and the Farley Fireman's Picnic, because you got to pay your dues first. You do that, you'll be rewarded, you know, on a bigger trip. So
basically within their 4 years they were able to go to,
well, we were allowed to travel every other year. So if a kid came in as a freshman, he would also go to sophomore. Once in a while we'd squeak another one in.
Yeah.
I think because the inaugurals came up so suddenly, you know, after the election, you had like 30 days to get your application in, you know, and then you weren't told until 1st of January. And what is it, January 21st is inaugural? You didn't have much time to get all that. But from the time they told you to logistically get everything ready, you know, so we practiced weekends, and once we knew, you know, and weekends and Saturdays, Sundays.
Oh, I know.
What have you?
Supposed to play a concert at the White House, and that got canceled because of cold. And didn't you guys have to put something on your mouth?
Well,
pieces?
As a precaution, we would, you know, because of the cold weather, we would dip the brass mouthpieces in hot paraffin, and then it would solidify, and then the kids didn't have metal against their lips; they had wax. And then we came up with a concoction. This was through, I had a couple of students that moved to the school district from Minnesota. I can't forget. I think their last name was Knight or something like that. Two girls, and they were in the band program in Minnesota, and they kind of taught me some of these tricks. They said, you know, to keep the valves and the trombone slides from freezing, we'd mix alcohol with glycerin and spray it on. And down to a certain degree, that would go down to probably about 28 degrees if it wasn't windy. If it was windy, then the wind chill would lock everything up. Yeah, so you had to, you know, you had to take those precautions because you didn't know what the temperature was going to be in D.C. on inaugural day. You know, and if it did get cold all of a sudden and you didn't have these things prepared, you'd be marching past the reviewing stand, not blowing the nose, listening to the drummers. So that was always a concern, is the cold weather, but we managed.
Did you ever come up with a number of kids that went on all those trips? It's probably thousands.
I think about 4,000.
Yeah. You put a dollar figure on the experiences that those kids had.
And they were appreciative, you know. I think part of the appreciation was due to that they'd want to reward me and everybody that sent them out there with a good performance and good behavior. You know, they want to represent their school well, which I think they do.
You should get your first assistant band director.
Boy, I don't remember. Probably
Ernie?
No, Ernie was later. I'm not sure who the first one was. We've gone through quite a few. Probably the third or fourth year. You know, I had so many students, I couldn't handle them all myself. So, probably third year, and I don't remember who that was.
In an elementary or something.
Yeah, right.
Really, I probably worked there. Did you guys talk about the size of the band?
Largest was, I told Bob, 230. And that was the year before Aquin became a public school.
Okay.
And I think we ran out of uniforms at 210. So some kids had to remain a spectator, unfortunately. Because, you know.
So you started doing, then you started doing the halftime performances.
When football came. Yep. Mm-hmm.
There was always a highlight, some of those shows.
Yeah.
But then there was always the conflict of the band practicing on the football field.
Mess it up.
Yeah, that was a certain coach that we won't mention.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we'll tell you this off the record.
You can be rest assured if the band is going to practice on the field, there's going to be someone in the office.
Yeah, that's right.
Too funny.
yeah, you know, that was one of the reasons why, you know, the year after I left the school went to block scheduling. And my argument against block scheduling is that band meets every other day like any other class. And if it's on a Monday, and that particular week, if your classes are on Tuesday and Thursday, and you've got a football halftime on Friday, and it rains one of the days or two of the days, what do you do? You know, you can't practice in the gym and then transfer all that out to the football field. So I'm a firm believer in meeting every day, you know.
Yeah.
Were you in a marching band at St. Mary's?
Yeah, St. Mary's was the first 2 years was ROTC requirement, and so we were a quasi-military band, you know, so we got uniforms from, you know, ROTC and some instruments and so forth. We were kind of subsidized by the government, and we did march in the Rose Bowl, and let's see, 1956, I think it was.
Hawkeyes were out there around that time.
Well, that time it was, I think, Michigan or Ohio State. I'm not sure.
No doubt.
But that was the 1 year that it rained. That parade is like 7 miles in length. And it rained the entire parade. One of the few years that it did rain. And I know some of the instruments that had an upright bell, they were constantly turning them over to empty the water out of it.
Well, you know, when you mentioned that, Susie Ice wanted to go to the Rose Bowl parade.
Yeah.
After I retired, and so I have a cousin that lives out there in Santa Barbara, so we agreed to go out and go to the Rose Bowl parade, and I think it was like 07 or 08.
Yeah.
We go out. And they had lined up the bus to go to Pasadena, so we get on the bus.
Okay.
And it starts raining.
Oh, boy.
And anyway, we went to the parade, and the bleachers had tickets. We sat in them. We sat in the rain the entire parade.
Yeah.
You can see the weight of the water on those floats.
Yes, yeah.
You know, on the flowers. Yeah. And it was just a sodden mess. It was only happened, like you mentioned, here.
Sure.
Hardly ever rains in L.A., I say.
No, that is occasionally.
Yeah.
But kind of a sidelight on my education at St. Mary's, as I said, the first 2 years of ROTC were mandatory, and then your junior and senior year, if you decided to continue, then you were commissioned a second lieutenant after your senior year and after you went through the basic training. And I thought that'd be a good route to go, so I started my third year of ROTC, and one day I got a call to visit I think it was the lieutenant colonel who was his acronym was PMST, whatever that stood for. He was the head of the ROTC program, and he called me in. He said, "Schmitz," he said, "I see that you are a music major." I said, "Yes, sir." And, "Well," he says, "I have some advice for you." He said, "You know, we're artillery, and if you stand next to a howitzer for 2 or 3 years, you're not going to be able to hear a thing." So I said, "In other words, you're suggesting that I drop out of the program." He said, "Yeah, that would be if you're going to continue to major in music." 125 millimeter howitzer right next to it.
You could have ended up like your son Mike, huh?
Well, you know, at that time, I could have ended up with a lot of my classmates. Helicopters were just coming in. Oh, they thought that's the greatest thing. But most of them went to Vietnam.
Didn't come back.
Yeah, but I did. After I graduated, I could have played in the 4th Army Band, which was stationed in San Antonio, and some Air Force group. But I owed my parents money for tuition, so I thought, I'm going to teach. And fortunately, I came back here and found a teaching job. And everything worked out.
The same size as Horace, as far as the...
It's co-educational now, so I think it's pretty big now. At that time, that was the only male Catholic college in San Antonio, and then there were two female colleges, Our Lady of the Lake and Incarnate Word. But now...
Was your dad a teacher, a music teacher?
Yeah, my dad was band director here.
You know.
Yeah, he did, but first he was in the municipal band back in the I don't know, I guess the 20s and 30s. And what happened there? He was just a performer. He was working in his father's clothing store. And the band director for the municipal band got drafted. So they said to my dad, they said, hey, we need a director. We'll send you to school if you come back and direct us. So they sent him to Vandercook School of Music in Chicago, I think for one summer, and he came back. And then when I was a kid, he taught at five different schools, because schools were small in that days, but he taught in Earlville and Buck Creek and Hopkinton and Delhi, and he had five of them. And during the summer months, he would take me along, and wherever band was having a concert, I'd play with that band, so because we didn't have a band here at the high school.
Well, the Dyers of Municipal Band must have been pretty big for
you. It was pretty good for those days, sure. Yeah. It was a good band, yes. And I have photos.
Send somebody off to a conservatory.
Yeah. But anyway, then he started the band when Monsignor Huffman was here. He was the pastor and the superintendent of Xavier School, and he wanted to, none of the parochial schools in this area had bands, and he wanted to up one on them, and so he started the Xavier band. And then they started Beckman. My dad retired before Beckman was built. So yeah, that's pretty much where I got my training. So.
Your dad, what instruments did he play? Quite a few?
Yeah, as I remember, he played saxophone, I think, was his major instrument, but then he taught me trumpet and played some of the other ones.
Trumpet was your major one, right?
Yes, it was, yeah. Yeah, pretty much so.
So. I know, when I interviewed Paula Welter, we had like 34 applications.
Is that right?
So I learned a lot about major instruments.
Sure, yeah.
Trying to sort it out, you probably helped me.
Yeah, and that's good that I was a brass teacher and she was woodwind, so it's good to have covered.
She had an Iowa band.
Yeah.
In fact, quite a few of them were. The two Marlows were applicants that
year.
Yeah, probably it's important to have a solid program.
She was great.
All the way through.
She was great. She had a way of retaining those kids. You know, a lot of those kids start in the fifth grade. They get to the eighth grade or seventh grade, they drop out. And boy, she held them there like super glue. And then she encouraged them to go out for high school band, too. And I got probably, from the eighth grade graduating classes at the middle school, I probably got a good 90-95% of them. You know, a couple she couldn't convince to continue. Of course, at that time, the high school band had a pretty good, pretty strong tradition, and, you know, they wanted to be in it. Strong desires. So, but it was fun.
So probably would Wayne be the most influential support?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Yes, because he was a musician himself and a strong believer in the arts. You know, and of course in those days you didn't have football, you didn't have girls' athletics like you do now. And kids were ripe for band. You know, what else were they to do? Well, anybody can play an instrument. And I always used to tell them when they came in, I said, well, you know, we don't have any bench warmers. You know, if you're in the band, everybody performs. So.
Our district is so unique. I mean,
yeah.
Now you got districts with MFL and every, you know, three different initials all over.
Yeah.
The
state. Yeah.
ASW.
Yeah.
And I always said it. We'd have like 16 initials at least.
Yeah.
If we tried to do that.
Yeah.
Besides our district.
Yeah. Well, at one point in time, we had performed in every town in the district except one, and that was Holy Cross. But then when Mr. Hildebrand got on the board, one of his desires was to have that band go up there and play at Holy Cross. So we played for one of their picnics, or two of their picnics.
They never played
in Holy Cross. And they, I don't think, wanted us to be there. And we played for a picnic, and it was, you know, kind of, if we didn't have our own band parents there applauding, it would have been pretty quiet after each selection.
You probably remember, the first year I went to the high school. I got, somehow I convinced you to
go to Protovin.
Yeah.
And we went there, and it was a parade. It was a long trip. It took us all day to get there.
American trophy or something?
We had a trophy. They gave us a trophy. We won something. And it had a Protovin Centennial beer can on the top of it. Empty, of course.
Oh, my God. That was so neat.
It was neat. It was a nice parade. People were
And they still have. I go up there quite a bit. Yeah. Check days in August.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
That parish makes a ton of money.
Is that right?
They sell kolaches and chicken noodle soup.
There you go.
People come from all over.
I think this was their centennial, though,
wasn't
it?
Yes, it was.
Centennial parade.
Yes,
yeah, it was a pretty good parade. It was a warm day, I remember, too.
Yep.
Whereas, by and large, the school board members pretty supportive, too, I suppose.
Yeah, very much so. Right. Some of the board members had kids in band, too.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Ray went on some trips. And
Ray was on the D.C. one, I remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kept things live.
I never did.
That he did. Rainy.
Well, hey, thanks for getting together with us.
Well, I appreciate it. If I think of any other unique things you might want to include, I'll give you one of you a buzz. And
Buck go on any of the trips?
No.
I remember his wife went to D.C.
Yeah, he had two kids in band. He had David and
Danny.
David and Danny. I think they were both trumpet players. Yeah, nice kids. Yeah.
He was so busy keeping things going.
Yeah, I don't think he went on any of them. So, he was principal and athletic director, so
coaching.
He had to be there for everything. Yeah, and coach
every activity.
Yeah, he was a strong supporter of all activities.
I think when we were interviewing Wayne, I remember Buck always saying that the activities were the frosting on the cake.
And, you bet.
Really very supportive.
Yeah, get your grades up first and, stay eligible. And,
eligibility was every 2 or 3 weeks.
Every 2 weeks.
And basketball players.
You have to tell kids you can't perform this Friday night, but, hit the books and get back on.
Yeah, he was very religious.
In a way, he's right. They were there for the education first. So.
Yeah, that's true. When I was in high school, when I transferred to Sumner in my last 2 years, they had an eligibility list.
Yeah.
And every 2 weeks, and they type it out.
On
the bulletin board, and everybody go.
Well, Sumner had a good band. I don't know how they are now, but at one time they were pretty strong, I thought.
It only goes by the quarter now as far as, eligibility is concerned.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that was
back
a big change. It used to be every 2 weeks. Teachers had to turn those grades in.
Did you talk much about the facilities? You just worked around whatever.
Our first band room was way too small. It was band and vocal, in fact. Way too small for the number of kids we had. And then the second one, and now I haven't been in the new facilities, but I'd be licking my chops if I had something like that.
I remember those old locker rooms underneath those steps at the airport.
At the elementary,
right. That locker room.
Yeah, I think I gave
them. You were about everywhere but at the outhouse, I think.
Yeah. And now, not there because it was probably being used at the time. Well, I'm planning another trip up north this weekend, so see how the boys are doing.
When is your trip to Galena? Are you rescheduled?
The 22nd.